Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of April 16th. This week we feature an interview that Kerry Weber, associate editor, conducted with Cardinal Roger Mahoney, the former Archbishop of Los Angeles, on the subject of immigration reform. Kerry spoke with the Cardinal at this year's Los Angeles Religious Education Congress, and you can hear some of the festivities in the background.
Cardinal Mahoney, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate your taking the time.
I'm delighted. Thank you.
Now, you're giving a talk this weekend about immigration, which is a topic close to your heart. And I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about what you hope to convey to others this weekend.
Well, I think one of the needs here in our country, especially with our Catholic community, is to make sure they really have a better grasp of who we are as disciples of Jesus with immigrants and immigration issues, as well as a better understanding of our history, both our biblical and our historical journey here in this country, and of very great importance also is looking ahead, because a lot of people are very short-sighted. As baby boomers retire or turn 65, 10,000 a day, and for 19 more years. And they had about 40% many children. So who's gonna take their jobs? Who's gonna do their work? Who's gonna take care of them? So those who had to give glib things about being anti-immigrant really need a good grasp of our biblical history and story, the gospel imperative, our history in this country, and looking down the road.
Right, right. And now you've written a little bit about the ways that we are connected to people who may be here illegally that we may not even realize, that people may be pointing fingers saying, oh, so-and-so is hiring an illegal immigrant, when in reality we're all a lot closer to that than one might imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Fresno Bee one time had a great editorial, and the editorial started off by saying, if you want to know who's continuing to create immigration problems in this country, go look in the mirror. And I thought that was very, very powerful, because all of us, indirectly and directly, benefit from the labor, the low wages of our immigrant peoples. Take agriculture. As a sweet potato grower down in Alabama said recently, when asked, after he's losing millions because he can't harvest his sweet potatoes, asked, well, what can we do to stop this whole problem? He said, very good. He said, if you all just stopped eating, the immigrants would probably all leave. And I said, that sums it up really well. We as Americans like it this way. We like good products, good food, at the lowest percentage of our income of anybody in the world. And we like it that way. So, you know, it's this paradox. Oh, yeah, we want everything just the way it is. We want these people taking care of washing dishes, making beds, the car wash, doing agriculture, all these things. But of course, we don't want any immigrants here. So, you know, we want it both ways. And so here at this Congress, I'm trying to get people to understand the bigger picture, and that we are actually continuing our gospel imperative by standing with immigrants in our own time.
I think that sort of is connected to the idea of Christ as a kind of immigrant in a sense.
Yes, yeah, of course. Well, in fact, when my presentation, I use a PowerPoint presentation, and the very first slide is, I say, guess who were the first migrants in the world? And I put up the slide, it's Adam and Eve being tossed out of the garden. I said, everybody since in some way has been part of the migration trail. Mm-hmm. So, but we as Catholics, following the example and the outreach of Jesus and his words and his challenge, we need to take a leadership role in this issue.
And what are some of the ways that Catholics can do that, they can be more active?
Well, a number of things. First of all, we need to keep including our immigrant peoples in our prayer of the faithful in our parishes, so that we're constantly praying for them and for a just resolution of their situation. We also, if we don't know personally an immigrant or an immigrant family, we need to reach out and meet them and hear their stories. You know, it's interesting, the anti-immigrant rhetoric only works by putting these people in a third-party category. They can never, ever dare put a face on an immigrant. So they come up with these terms, oh, all those illegal aliens. I mean, what does that mean? But when the minute you start putting a human face on an immigrant, so that's one thing that's very important. Certainly, and by the way, I'd have to say our young adults today, and especially our Catholic colleges and universities, they really get this issue. And you know why? Whenever I visit that age group, the first question I ask is, how many of you were in high school with a classmate or someone you knew who was undocumented? Half the hands go up right away. I said, it's all over. This is great news, because they have a human face and a story on someone like them. So when it comes up to things like the DREAM Act, these young adults say, what? This is nonsense. Why are we punishing these people whom we need here in our country? We need them educated.
Right.
So these are some of the things. Obviously, there are some great websites. The one the Bishops' Conference has, justiceforimmigrants.org. There's also one called justfaith.org. And there are a lot of blogs out there that deal with this issue. But we need to continue to get informed, and we need to have better networking so that when we need action at a state level on a piece of legislation or in Congress, we've got a broader network ready to go.
What about the HB 56 in Alabama? I've read a lot of stories that seem to have put faces on some of those immigrants that have gone even further into hiding. Obviously, it's a discouraging bill. Have you seen the reaction to that as encouraging or discouraging?
Well, the reaction to it, I find in general, is very encouraging. In fact, on my blog, I reprinted a story from Newsweek. And it's fascinating, because what happened, Alabama legislature passes this anti-immigrant law, governor signs it, and not only did unauthorized immigrants leave, all kinds of authorized, documented immigrants left, because they didn't want to be hassled, because they're brown skinned. They didn't want to get stopped and questioned, and so a lot of them left. Well, agriculture went crazy, as they're losing millions and millions of dollars because there's no one who's going to come and pick these crops. As that same Alabama sweet potato farmer remarked very poignantly, he said, oh yes, and we advertise for Anglos all the time. He said, I even had a guy come one time who stayed 2 hours. Most of them are gone by within an hour. They just will not do this work, no matter what you pay them. They're not going to do it. So what has happened, these states do these punitive things. They actually create a groundswell of pro-immigrant attitude. So they, as did Colorado, as did Arizona, and now Alabama and Georgia, they've swept the entire agriculture industry into the pro-immigrant camp at the local state level. And it's marvelous. And besides that, we have also, especially in the South, picked up great support from all the evangelicals, because they too understand the biblical background. And so this just creates wonderful steps forward. Now, what's happening now in Alabama, I can assure you that legislature is getting hammered by the business community in their state, because it's not only the field work, it's the poultry industry.
Right.
It's the hog and pig industry. They're getting creamed by this law. Now, the federal courts have struck down a lot of it already, And we're just waiting now to the Supreme Court rules in Arizona versus USA. And the court's going to be hearing that, I think, April 25th, that particular case for oral argument. So we're expecting by the end of June a decision, because what are the different parameters? The Constitution says that the federal government is in charge of borders and who comes and who goes. Now, these states have been all these patchwork approaches. And are we going to end up with 50 different state immigration laws? I can't imagine anything worse. And by the way, what's fascinating in Alabama, so many of those unauthorized immigrants who left and they saw the continuing need, so many of them have circled back and are back in the same places where they started. And the growers are desperate. They just pay them in cash. So, which, of course, they could be paying payroll taxes, but we won't let them. You know, the whole thing is crazy. So, it's very interesting to see what the Supreme Court's going to do, because while it's Arizona versus USA, they can't forget the other states that have been doing different things. They're going to have to do something that reaches outside of Alabama, or then it's going to be Colorado versus U.S. Then it's going to be Georgia versus U.S. So they're going to have to do something which clarifies these roles for the whole country.
It's interesting. If you go to Ellis Island or someplace with a lot of history of immigration, there's posters from the 1850s that are making the same arguments against immigrant populations that people are making now. It's kind of mind-bogglingly, on some level, a little bit discouraging, because if we haven't been able to work out of those arguments in the last, 100 years, then more than that, how do we move forward?
Right. Well, there's a real reason why this comes up in cycles. It all, and I have that in my own presentation, but if you go back to our history, we only hear about immigrants as a problem during times of economic downturn. So only during times of recession. Now, it's interesting, we didn't hear it as much in the Depression. And I think the reason we didn't is because everybody was in trouble during the Depression. Everybody, equally. So the misery level was across the board. But take that out, that exception. And for example, here in California, 1994, we were in a recession, and so that's when Governor Pete Wilson gets passed the Prop 187, which, of course, the federal courts threw out virtually every piece of it, but that was in a recession. So you go back to the year 2000, we were in a housing mania, tech mania. You'll find nothing. Go to Google, you'll find nothing in the years 2000, 2005 at all about immigrants. And why? We needed every single one of them working. So you don't hear anything. So it's only in 2007, 2008, when we enter a new recession, who's responsible for this? We know those old immigrant folks, they're the ones making all the problems.
How do we move from that attitude during the times of recession to the good times, and how do we sort of try to maintain the attitude that we have during the good times during the recession?
Well, I think a couple of things. One of the things that the church can help do, and that's change minds and hearts, and not get caught up in the rhetoric. I find so disgusting the anti-immigrant rhetoric, which is, first of all, virtually untrue. But it's basically, a lot of it's racial, too. If these people were lily-white Anglos from Anglo countries, I tell you, you'd be hearing a lot less rhetoric. And because another thing people don't realize, we have 11 million undocumented in this country now, approximately. But 4.5 million of the 11 came here on visas. Tourist visa, visitor's visa, education visa, and never left. That's 4.5 million people who are not south of the border. They didn't come on. They came to an international airport. And but we have no system to keep track of those people. So we blame the undocumented from south of the border for the problems of the whole broken system. So not only have to change minds and hearts, we need an immigration reform that recognizes our imbalance between the demand for low-skilled workers and the supply, and how that works. Right now, the United States has 5,000 green cards available for low-skilled workers per year for the entire world. I mean, that's crazy. And to point out that how crazy it was, is back in the boom days, before the recession, 300,000 to 500,000 undocumented came across borders, and guess what? 90% of them got jobs. Well, hello? You know, we have 5,000 visas, but 300,000 to 500,000 actually got work, which shows that the whole thing's out of balance. So we need a far more humane and better system.
And how do you see this immigrant populations impacting the way that the parish communities work and the church works in the U.S. today?
Well, there are a lot of wonderful advantages that immigrants are making, and we're seeing this throughout the country. The highest level of home ownership, new home ownership in this country, is among Hispanics. Nationwide, in the escrow companies, they have a nationwide database. The five top names in purchasing homes, I think in the last 2 years, are Gomez, Hernandez, Martinez, Lopez, and I forgot the other one. But they're the five top names for the United States. So guess what's happening? As 39 million baby boomers start to downsize and move out of larger houses to smaller condos, apartments, and things, guess who's buying the houses? Immigrants are buying the houses. It's amazing, because we have seen over and over again how quickly immigrants assimilate. We just need to offer more opportunities for assimilation. For example, people say, oh, well, they don't want to learn English. Yeah, they do, but we have so few English classes available for them, and they're all filled up instantly. So we need to do more to integrate them, assimilate them into our culture, and to realize they're going to be an economic engine for the future.
Do you feel hopeful about this future, the future of sort of this integration and
immigration? I do. I see it all the time. Just take Southern California. That's a good example. California used to be a part of Mexico until 1848. We stole Mexico from Mexico through California and Arizona and Nevada and New Mexico and Texas, etc. But it used to be part of Mexico. And so we've got deep roots here of the Spanish-speaking influence here. But what's happened here is very interesting. We see this, I see it all the time in Los Angeles. You have zones or areas of the city where newly arrived immigrants first go. Then, after they're able to be somewhat successful, they move up and out. And we've got all these small cities across the Los Angeles County area that move from one step to the next step up, to the next step up, to the next step up. And it's just amazing. So we have many cities in this county that now have second, third, fourth generation Hispanics, and they're middle class, upper middle class communities now. We have all kinds of them. And immigrants, and of course, they're all contributing to the economy and the life of the country. So that will continue to happen. But right now, we have 11 million people trapped in this country. And we have no way for them to be registered, to get on a path towards earned legal status. We have nothing at the moment. I see part of my job is just to keep lifting up the issue and the folks, and to broaden our understanding and to enlist especially young adults. And we've got great things in the works for this, especially they're designing some social networking devices that are going to be just awesome to link these young people together. But people who get this issue and want to help, help with immigrants and with legislation. So we want to have 4 or 5 million people on the network. That's our goal.
I hope so. Yep. And good luck with that.
Well, we just go to the colleges and universities, and they're all dying to participate.
That is very hopeful. That's wonderful.
I don't have any hope for the folks in Congress, present crop of Congress, that anything's going to happen. But I do have hope in our young adults for the future, that they're going to make it happen.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
Thank you very much.
Stopping. There we go.